Good afternoon. I'm Florence Schwein, your host for today's El Paso Primetime. And with me is El Paso fitness and nutrition professional, Patrick Hopkins. Patrick holds a BS in nutritional science from California Polytech State University. And if you have been listening to this series, you know that Patrick is grocery shopping with me to help me choose the best choices in the grocery store. As a personal trainer, Patrick emphasizes that exercises work hand in hand with the food we eat. Often managing what foods we eat starts right here in the grocery store. Thank you for your time and expertise, Patrick. Listeners, we've been using my household of two people in their 70s, but the hints are good for all age groups and family sizes. So far, we have in the basket fresh produce, meat, poultry, fish, and cereals. By the way, if you've missed one of those segments, you can find them at ktep.org and click on Past Programs. In the archive, scroll down to El Paso Primetime. Patrick, this is the longest trip to the grocery store that I've ever made. I like my shopping to be a dash and circle, meaning run in and shop the perimeters. What's your take on that approach?
I think it's a great approach. I think avoiding the center aisles is the best bet to stay away from the stuff that we often buy but probably shouldn't buy.
Mm. About once a month or when there are real sales, then I do my center aisle shopping.
Absolutely.
And so there you have it, listeners, our first tip of this segment. So now stick with us as we talk about bread. Not as bad as some would have us believe, right?
Yeah. Breads and pastas and rices and all that just got a huge hit 5 or 7 years ago. Maybe closer to 10 years ago when Atkins really came around, and it just got slammed really bad. And that was a real shame for a lot of us nutritionists because those nutrients are very important. It's just the way that we choose the nutrients, and obviously serving size of the nutrients is a huge issue. So, again, we as Americans are just plain and simple over-consumers of carbs, and that's the way it is. So it falls in line with, ooh, no carbs, no carbs, and that's not necessarily a great idea to take into your nutritional planning. So I'm a promoter of carbohydrates. My clients eat carbohydrates. There's a time to eat them, and there's a time not to. So mm-hmm. I think that's important to understand when you shouldn't.
Okay. Bagels. I like my bagels, but I think I found an answer. See what you think. You know, the smaller bagels, the multi-grain ones mm-hmm. that you can find in the market, often in the freezer case.
Yeah.
Because
they don't move as fast, so they obviously the shelf life, right. They want to maintain the shelf life.
So when you were just talking about portion size, mm-hmm. Even though these are smaller, there's a lot of carbs in them, right?
Well, and they're calorically dense. What you have in front of you right there is 200 calories per bagel, which is pretty standard. They range between 200 and 300. You say that they're smaller, but that's the composition of a bagel. It's a very dense bread product. It's, you know, there's not a whole lot of air in it. So I like the idea of that product that you have in front of you. However, if you could limit it to a half of a bagel and bone up your bagel with, you know, like we said, cream cheese and tomato and deli turkey meat and things like that, that will give that half bagel much more value in terms of meeting other nutrients, your proteins and your fibers and things and your vegetables, then it would be a nice healthy meal.
Yeah, and this isn't quite a mini bagel, but it's sort of in between.
Sure.
And I have small hands, but it's less than my palm mm-hmm. of my hand. So, and by the way, measuring foods by your hand is probably a good idea, right?
It is. It's a very quick way. Most times measuring by the palm of your hand is in conjunction with measuring protein sources, a chicken breast, a beef patty, you know, things like that. Most times you can get a much better indication of the size of the palm of the hand in about a half inch thickness is typically a 3 to 4 ounce serving.
So, and does that go with the ratio of the size of the person, too?
No. Big hand is going to be a
your hand's
bigger,
much bigger
yes,
than mine.
My hand is, so my serving size would probably be closer to 4 or 5 ounces. And that's what's important to learn. And I'm not asking everybody to go out and buy a scale, but those types of measuring things are good to have in the house, you know, mm-hmm. just so you have a base understanding of what does 3 or 4 ounces look like? What does 5 ounces look like? Because when we eat meat, we typically overconsume our meats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you order an 8 ounce, 12 ounce steak at the dinner table and that thing's gone by the end of the night.
Not me, but, well. I don't fit, right?
You're the oddball in this whole equation.
Okay, I'll be oddball again. Yeah. I really do make bread. I'm on my third bread maker.
Wow, okay.
Bread making machine. But this time I got a 1 pound bread making machine because it was just too much bread mm-hmm. in a household for two. Mm-hmm. What about homemade bread as opposed to purchased bread in a grocery
I think it's great. I think anytime you have the ability to control what you're eating instead of the food manufacturers controlling that for you, I think it's a great idea. And you just mentioned it was too much bread, and largely it was too much bread because you likely didn't put any preservatives in your bread when you made it. So therefore, it sits on the countertop, or even if it goes in the fridge, it doesn't last very long.
No.
It starts to get
moldy.
And yeah, exactly. So you don't find that with the products that we get at the grocery store. They can sit on the kitchen counter for 7-10 days before they start getting moldy, and those are the preservatives that were those chemicals and things like that that sometimes we'd like to avoid.
We have wonderful neighbors who get a half a loaf.
There you go. Yes.
So, anyway, we try out all kinds of recipes.
Yeah.
But one of the things you can do with that kind of bread is you can use natural sweeteners like fruit mm-hmm. in your bread
mm-hmm.
or
agave.
Uh-huh. Or sometimes applesauce.
Exactly, yeah. Applesauce is a great substitute, ironically, for fats,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And prunes.
Mm-hmm. Sure, especially the dried fruits are mm-hmm. so dense in flavor, you mm-hmm. know, because they've been dried so
And
much.
They're great for homemade bread
machine
breads.
I think so, too.
Years ago, you know, like 50 years ago, I needed it by hand and stuff, but I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. You just don't find – what you can make at home, you don't find in the grocery stores unless you go to select areas and it's a very specific type of bread. You know, those big chunky – you just mentioned prunes. How do you ever see a bread that's got a big chunk of prune sticking out of it? No, but it tastes incredible. You end up spending $6 a loaf when you go to a bakery to go mm-hmm. buy something like that. So you're making great product at home for much cheaper,
yeah.
and you have control over your product at the same time.
Yeah, I just made oatmeal bread, and it had apple butter in it,
but
the non-sweetened apple butter.
Okay.
And you can only get that like at a new health
right.
food store.
Right.
But, yeah. Anyway, that's what our neighbors had this week, too,
yeah.
with us.
You got to get them to get a bread maker, too, so you guys can switch back and forth.
Anyway, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I bet.
It is a neighborly thing to do, but not everybody bakes bread.
No.
And so at the grocery store, what do you recommend?
Well, I'd always go for whole grains mm-hmm. over enriched, bleached wheat flour, which is essentially just stripped wheat flour that's, you know, it becomes white. Whole grains, and they're truly whole grains. You'll see something that says whole grain and they'll add 50% of wheat flour and 50% white flour and they can call it whole grain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times if you just look at the color of the outside of the bread,
mm-hmm.
you'll have a pretty big indication of how dense the whole grains are. That being said, you can easily skew that color of the bread by adding molasses to it.
Yeah,
because molasses is so deep and rich and dark, and it will change the color of the bread in spite of it being predominantly white flour. So, you know, there are lots of bread manufacturers out on the market. Your cheaper ones are probably not the best bet. If I were to choose a bread.
Yeah, what would you choose? I'm really pumping.
I promote to my clientele a product. It's made by the company Alvarado Street Bakery. And the product's name that I like, they have quite a few different brands, but I like their diabetic lifestyles.
Oh, why, Ben?
It's extremely high in fiber. It's they tout it as being 5 on the glycemic index, and we'll talk about glycemic index a little bit later, which is an extremely low value for spiking insulin levels. So those people that are concerned with diabetes, obviously it's called diabetic lifestyle. So it's a great bread. You can still enjoy bread and not have the concerns of spiking insulin and for those diabetic patients.
Yeah. Well, you know, bread has been around for a long time. The ancient Egyptians, when they were building the pyramids, they had beer and bread.
Yeah, that was their main source of caloric intake for building.
Right.
As active as they were.
Well, we're active, but I don't think we're going to be building pyramids.
No, we certainly aren't as active as they were. So I like that bread. It's very dense. It's incredibly grainy feeling. It's very hearty. It's very deep and rich, and it's just got a great flavor.
So it feels and tastes like bread.
Oh man, you can actually see the whole Montana Spring wheat granules in there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great product. I really like it.
Oh, good. So should we move on and get something to put on our bread?
Sure.
Peanut butter.
Okay.
That comes, you know, I know what I buy, but tell me about peanut butter.
Peanut butter, I think, is great. There's been lots of changes in peanut butter in the last few years. They're adding different types of oils, for example, flaxseed oil to their peanut butter. Mm-hmm. They're pulling some of the peanut oil out and enriching it with flaxseed oil, which is a great essential fatty acid. They're actually adding some products or adding whole flax seeds in it, which isn't the best in the world only because we don't metabolize a whole flax seed. It needs to be milled for us to actually process it. Some manufacturers are adding egg whites back into it. They give it a little bit different flavor. It gives it a little bit more bounce to the peanut butter. It's an additive that promotes a thickener. But you're getting a good quality protein in there at the same time. So I would always, if I had to tell someone the quick and dirty about peanut butter, find the reduced fat peanut butters. The difference between reduced fat and whole fat is 16 grams for whole fat per serving and 12 for reduced fat.
A little bit.
There's really not that big of a difference in terms of flavor anyway. There is a fairly substantial difference in terms of fat intake. You know, your traditional brands, we all know what they are. Maybe stay away from those unless the reduced fats. Go to your whole food markets and see what kind of new products are out on the market. And a lot of them taste incredible. And you just haven't ever tried them. And chances are you find something that you like and it's very healthful and that'll probably be your new source for peanut butter. I like it.
I have a husband who loves peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but how about – oh, and he puts butter on his too.
On top of peanut butter and jelly?
I only know two people in the world that make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and they put butter on it first and then peanut butter and then jelly.
That's a tasty sandwich.
I tease him about it all the time. Anyway, so much for that. Let's get into those jams and jellies.
Okay.
You know.
Well, the difference between a jam and a jelly, jams are typically your preserves. Jellies are pretty much devoid of the whole grains, whole bits of fruit in there. So I like the jams more, the preserves more. And then again, there are, this is where artificial sweeteners have really come into play. With respect to these types of products, they're pulling out a lot of the fruit sugar and adding back in some of the artificial sweeteners to allow for less sugar, less insulin spiking in a diabetic case, quite a bit more flavor at the same time, because most times the artificial sweetener has much more sugar flavor. It's a lot stronger than the fructose that's
in the natural food.
Yeah, exactly. And again, there are some really healthful choices. I really like the planner style of jellies or jams, the P-O-L-A-N-E-R. You can find it at some of the grocery stores in town. But they have a high fiber.
And I think those are called fruit spreads.
Yes, exactly. Those are fruit spreads.
Mm-hmm.
There's a high fiber product that almost half of the calories come from a fiber source. And so you're getting high fiber in there at the same time with – it typically comes from pectins and whatnot that are soluble fibers, and those are great. And they don't taste as rich and as dense as a regular whole jam or jelly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, this is work, and we do have to work towards a little bit more of a healthful environment in our food choices, and that's one that we have to kind of give just a little bit.
My husband loves that black cherry one of those fruit spreads.
Oh, yeah?
It's really...
The planter style?
Yeah.
It is good.
It's really quite good.
I like
good.
The apricot a lot.
Mm, I do too, but he's not fond of
no.
apricots. But anyway, so we've kind of handled that, and we can use those fruit spreads or the jams in many different ways.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. I like to promote that particular fruit spread that I was just talking about. There's nothing wrong with adding that to a Greek yogurt.
Mm.
Greek yogurts mm-hmm. typically have a nice bitter bite to them that's not real appreciated by most.
That and Bulgarian yogurt.
Right.
Try that one.
So adding some of that fruit spread to one of those and then stirring it up really well, you're controlling your fruit source.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of hampering the bite of the Greek yogurt. At the same time, you can throw in a tablespoon or a teaspoon of milled flaxseed in there. Mm-hmm. So now you have a great fiber source at the same time. And you've just created a nice whole food replacement, a meal for yourself that is great quality source and protein. You got some great fiber source and you've got some fruit in there too.
Mm, that'd be a good thing.
It tastes good.
Early in the morning before mm-hmm. my workout.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with even chopping up some strawberries and throwing whole strawberries in there at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And even if they're frozen strawberries, it's okay.
they don't taste quite the same, but
right.
They've kind of wept a little bit, some of their hydration out of it. But you're right. It's a good source.
Yeah. Freezing strawberries isn't as good of a product as like frozen blueberries.
No. Yeah. There's a big difference in the cell of a strawberry as opposed to a blueberry. The cell mm-hmm. will explode in a strawberry.
Okay. Well, we're into the sweetener kind of thing. How about syrups?
Syrups have come a long way too in the last few years. And there are a lot. It used to be, you'd see syrups that are added butter flavor and all that kind of stuff. And now you're seeing lower calorie.
Or no calorie.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of chemical-based syrups out on the market, and there's one that I particularly like a whole lot. There's a company called Walden Farms, and they make a syrup in a couple different flavors. But they also make a bunch of other mm-hmm. additive sources. But I like their syrup an awful lot. The only downside to it for those people that are really concerned about chemicals, yes, it's calorie-free, gluten-free, fat-free. It's everything free. It's very rich in flavor. But the flip side is if you're a diabetic, you're not getting that insulin spike out of a product that typically has an awful lot of sugar and can promote huge insulin spikes.
Right.
So, yes, syrups have changed a lot. So if anything, I would say go towards your lower calorie syrups. They're going to be pulled out. You're probably going to see a little bit of artificial sweetener in there, but it's probably much better than the whole sugar product.
So if we're handling our jams and jellies and syrups in a way that helps us to lower some of that sugar intake, how about I need to get some fruit juice here in my basket, and I need to get some sodas. How about that?
Yeah, fruit juice is and that's a funny thing with labeling. It used to be an issue with they would say there's fruit juice in there, and then they were restricted by saying you have to have at least 10% of the fruit juice come from fruit sources to be able to say that there's fruit juice in there.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing a huge switch to 100% fruit,
right.
And that's great, and I really mm-hmm. like that. However, there are also lower calorie sources of that where they've stripped 50% of that fruit sugar because sugar's sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in moderation, and too much fruit sugar is still not a great thing.
Right.
So a lot of products have half of the sugar source in there,
mm-hmm.
and they're labeled as 50% or reduced sugar on them. And those are probably your better sources. And they still taste great. They're just not as sugar rich.
And you've got to be careful when you're looking at fruit juices, or you think you're looking at fruit juices, because a lot of times it's really a fruit drink as opposed to regular juices.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I thought I had some notes on the juices. I'll find them and we'll come back to it.
Okay.
But it was pretty profound.
Well, you know, and I do keep sodas at our house. And, you know, sometimes I really do like to have a Coke.
Mm-hmm.
But so what about sodas? Again, the artificial sweetener type?
Yeah, there's a lot of studies that suggest that in spite of the artificial sweetener promoting a zero-calorie intake.
Yeah, I like
in a
zeros.
Diet soda.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the sugar flavor of the artificial sweetener that prompts us to want more.
Oh, so that's what we've got to be careful
that's of. What we're mostly concerned about. And these studies suggest that it's okay to have one Diet Coke or one whatever it is, mm-hmm. diet flavor, but be careful that that one doesn't turn into two and three and four through the course of the day, because your body is craving that sugar flavor. And typically, those artificial sweeteners are much more sugary than, what is it, like sucralose is 800 times more sugar sweet than regular table sugar.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It's pretty intense.
Wow. If you are just joining us, I'm Florence Schwein, and my guest is nutritionist and personal trainer Patrick Hopkins. And we're filling my grocery cart with food that really makes sense and is good for us. Please remember that this adventure is a challenge for educational purposes only and not an endorsement of any particular product or grocery store. You know, we've been talking now about sugars and sugars and sugars. Patrick, can you explain to me a couple of terms, glycemic index and glycemic load?
Okay. Glycemic index is an index that rates the value of a food product in a numerical value to indicate how much that product will induce an insulin spike in the body.
Ah.
So in other words, 100 is reserved for the value of table sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You consume table sugar and it's got a glycemic index of 100. There are certain, like for example, oatmeal I think is 48.
Ah.
You know, so that gives you an indication. Brown rice can go anywhere between like 48 and 55, somewhere in there. So there's a couple examples. The difference between glycemic index and glycemic load is load actually brings in the quantity of that carbohydrate that will induce that insulin spike. So for example,
a medium apple.
Right. And this is a red apple. It has a glycemic index of 38.
Mm-hmm.
But a glycemic load of only 6.
Ah, so that's...
Yeah, let me quantify some of this. A glycemic index of, let's see, of 1 to 55 is considered low.
Oh, okay.
56 to 69 is considered medium. And 70 to 100 is considered high.
And we want to keep it low.
We'd like to keep it in the low to medium area. Yeah. And that's going to help us dictate, for example, a russet potato, you're getting up into the 75, 80s.
Already. With one thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. A sweet potato, however, will drop it down to the 45, 48 area. So pretty substantial difference. You've gone from high all the way down to low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, glycemic load, however, the values are much lower. We would like to stay between 1 and 10. As a low source of glycemic value or of glycemic load.
Uh-huh.
And anything in the 19 to 20 or up to 19, 11 to 19 is medium and 20 and above is high.
Okay.
So let's go back to my apple source. The glycemic index was 38 and the glycemic uh-huh. load was 6. So what it's really telling you is that there may not be a whole lot of carbohydrates. Let me pick something that's a little bit higher. Okay, here's a good one. Here's a good one.
For the listeners, Patrick has his computer here, and so we're into this really good information here.
Let's say, for example, you have a glycemic index that's really high. Mm-hmm. So you think, wow, that's not really great, but then the glycemic load of it is very low.
It's low.
That's what it's telling you then. You extrapolate that there aren't a whole lot of carbohydrates in that product. The mm-hmm. carbs that are in there have a high glycemic index.
Oh, but there aren't.
But the quantity of those carbs are so low.
Right.
That the load value drops down considerably just because of serving size. The serving of those carbs is low in that product.
One thing I'm learning, that serving size is probably one of the most important thing as we go through this grocery store.
Yeah, it really is. We're just over consumers.
We
need to finish what's on our plate, and that's not always a great thing.
Uh-oh.
No, it's not. Unless
you could, wait. I grew up where you didn't leave the table till you finished everything on your plate.
Sure.
Because of all those little children in poor countries and didn't have anything.
Times have changed considerably, especially in the Americas.
I think so. So let's go back. It's not just a matter for people with health problems, but it's better for all of us to keep that glycemic load low.
Yeah, and I don't know that I would be so concerned. Glycemic load is fairly new. It's been out for 5-6 years now. I wouldn't be so concerned about load. I would probably choose index first. If you're gonna mm-hmm. introduce yourself into this whole concept of choosing carbs based on insulin spiking and sugar levels, mm-hmm. start with glycemic index. It's very straightforward. It's mm-hmm. very straightforward. You can pull up do a search online for glycemic index, and it'll give you this huge list of thousands mm-hmm. of foods, mm-hmm. and then you choose. Like that. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to end up getting overwhelmed if you try and start mismatching glycemic index and glycemic load.
Because that depends on everything that you try to.
Get your feet wet with glycemic index first, get accustomed to it, and then if you want to fiddle around with glycemic load, then you're great.
Those are good hints.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably much better.
Yeah. For the layman out here.
No, I don't know about that.
You know, we all learn about foods as we grow older, and you think you're very knowledgeable, and then you meet someone like Patrick Hopkins and you find out that maybe there's a lot to learn.
Yeah, so, education is huge. Absolutely.
I know. And so that's what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and this all started out because we were going to take me grocery shopping and find out the best things to get. And then he decided my grocery list wasn't real normal.
No, your grocery list was unusually healthy. And so it wasn't a good representation of society, that's for sure.
So
I had to change it a little bit.
Yeah. So we've been on this new trip here doing this. And we're going to be doing a couple more, at least, episodes.
Yeah,
we need to talk about those canned goods. We need to be talking about beans and canned fruit and soups. And so stick with us, listeners. This is quite an adventure. Patrick, we are out of time. And I want to express my heartfelt thanks. You're pretty amazing. How can listeners reach out to you? By phone?
Yes, my number is area code 830-431-1242.
And just tell him that you've been listening to him on the radio.
Yes, please do. Leave me a voicemail if I'm not available. And you can reach me online at www.builtbypatrick.com.
Great. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
You can also visit the website of the Rio Grande Cancer Foundation at www.rgcf.org. They want to promote good health for all of us, and they introduced Patrick Hopkins and me, for which I'm grateful. Thanks to Dennis Wu, our producer, for his suggestions, support, and handling the technical aspects of bringing El Paso Primetime to you. I'm Florence Schwein.